Welcome to She Knows, hosted by Brandon Burns, another show from Torched Productions. This is the show where we tell the stories of amazing women doing amazing things. We share stories of adversity, success, leading as a woman, overcoming challenges with gender, stereotypes, and role models for women all over the world. Tune in to walk away with at least one key insight every episode that will help you on your journey. Let's get down to the show, and if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and review us on all your favorite platforms and visit us at gettorched.com. Well, welcome back, everyone, to the next episode of She Knows with your host, Brandon Burns. I'm super excited for today's guest. She's joining me from Sydney lockdown, which is very similar to what we're experiencing down here in Melbourne. She's got a pretty good office set up there, I can see. You're all going to enjoy it. She's a trademarks attorney. She's the founder of Como IP Attorneys and Operation Trademark Rescue. She's a proud mother of three. She is an Aussie because she's been here since she was 22, but she did move to New York City at 19 and originally hailed from New Mexico and spent time in Los Angeles. She went to UTS here in Sydney, and I reckon she's a pretty amazing woman doing amazing things. I'd love to welcome to the show Alicia Paul Beverly. How are you?
Thank you so much, Brendan. I'm really well, and I'm thrilled to join you. Thank you.
Pleasure. Now, tell me, what's that one thing that you've already achieved today that was like that big task you really wanted to make sure you got done?
Well, that's such a great question. I actually am not a fan of the heat, so I have moved my walks to the morning. So I actually have had my big 3K, three and a bit K walk this morning before it got hot. And it's such a, actually, I don't know, I didn't think of that before because it really sets the day up nicely. I felt terrific when I got back.
It's brilliant. So that's great because that leads us into my first question, which is, and you can give me maybe pre-lockdown and during, but what does a typical day in the life of Alicia Paul Beverly look like?
I'm a very early riser. That seems to run in the family. So I'm usually up and ready to go by about five, which is crazy because who does anything at five? But that's when my eyes fly open. So what can you do? So I'm up at five. I am actually starting to cultivate some mindfulness time and some meditation. And I'm finding that that is similarly extremely helpful during this particular period that we're in. It helps me to sort of rein in the thinking and maybe harness what I'm intending to do with my day and how I'd rather feel. So early morning start, I have a coffee that I'm kind of crazy about that my parents send me from New Mexico, which is just insanely delicious.
Tell us more about that.
Well, it's from New Mexico and it has what are called piñon seeds, which are these little fragrant seeds that are from the mountains of New Mexico. And evidently they either grind it up into the coffee or somehow it deals with the coffee. I don't know. But whatever happens, it is the most aromatic thing ever. I actually go to bed thinking about how excited I am to have that coffee in the morning, which is crazy. And so I get that started, I've got a cat the day starts and I can't help myself, I have to say, but one of the very first things that I do is I check in what's happened with my clients' trademarks overnight. I interact with IP Australia, the trademarks office, through an online dashboard. And I just find it so hard not to check that pretty much straight away because it actually can frame a lot of how my day goes. Sorry. So, what notices are in there will very often determine who I speak to, advice I have to give, how I spend time in research and so forth. So that's kind of how my day starts. Get that walk in. And in terms of the rest of the day, it's really, about my clients. If I have clients that are in the FMCG space where they're creating product a lot, I'll tend to hear from them quite a bit during the week. So I might hear from clients in that space. And then other than that, I'll just have, you know, my new clients who I find exciting to get to know. I kind of fall in love with those clients, the new ones and the ones that I've had for 15, 20 years. You know, you get to know people. And that's a really big part of why I love what I do. I love the trademarks, but I think it's crazy about people. And so I really enjoy those interactions.
Yeah, excellent. Tell me, from the walk, has there been one activity or productivity hack that you've implemented that's not only gotten you through the lockdown circumstances, but actually you've gone, wow, I've really got some efficiency going here?
Yeah, I've been really putting my feelers out for audiobooks, YouTube videos, anything that's a resource that is about deep thinking. And I sort of feel like the more I've embraced lockdown as what I'm calling the Alicia Lab, which is obviously, you know, for myself, like what I'm experiencing, the more I find that I'm welcoming of this time period, and that I'm beyond accepting. So I'm, you know, accepting means you're like, okay, it is what it is. But the Alicia Lab concept, which I know sounds kind of crazy, but anybody can do this, is really about finding myself in this time, bettering myself in this time, and spending time understanding myself. And I guess it's one of the luxuries of having adult children that I can actually spend my time in that way. I really have so much admiration and empathy for parents who are actively working and also actively parenting and also have become teacher's aides, if not teachers. So yeah. I don't know how you do it, guys. Hats off.
Yeah, that's very true. You mentioned that you're a proud mum of three and they're all grown up now and they're adults. Mm. And obviously that's meant you've had to really lean into developing yourself as a role model. Talk to me about who some of your role models were growing up, both, you know, from a close sort of family nature and also maybe from afar, or, you know, from an idol perspective.
You know, interestingly, looking around for things that I might want to watch and do of an evening because I don't have children around, I realized that there was an old TV series that I loved. And in thinking about why I loved that series, which was Mary Tyler Moore, I remembered that it was because she was this working woman role model. And my mother was actually that. I had that living and breathing in my own home. Mm-hmm. She owned her own business. She was a woman with her own real estate agency in the 1970s at a time which was extremely unusual for women. In fact, I recently discovered that she actually had to have the work from home conversation back at that time. And there was one man in the room of a panel of men who were between her and whether or not this was going to be allowed in their industry in America. And he saw the importance of that for her as a working woman. And it was him that turned the panel around and she was able to get what she needed from that. So I was raised in a house where I had a mother working from home. I used to have to answer the phone professionally. And I was like 7 or 8 and I would answer that phone appropriately and professionally and I would take messages. So she was definitely my role model. And then I had idols, you know, such as, you know, quirky Mary Tyler Moore, who was, I mean, I think about it now, looking at it, it's all kind of very old fashioned in many ways, extremely sexist, but hey, that's what was around. And other than that, you know, David Attenborough and a whole host of prominent men. But when I was a kid, I didn't have a middle name, and I was reading about the suffragette named Alice Paul. And so I came home one day and I asked my mother if I could give myself her last name as my middle name. And that's how I came to have Paul as my middle name, was in response to what I read about this amazing woman, Alice Paul, who worked for the vote for women back in the early part of the 1900s, I guess, the early part of the 20th century.
Oh, that's brilliant. I love hearing the story about you being a receptionist at the age of 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I wonder at what age you got to make your first sales call.
You know, that is a really good question, because I'm crazy about sales. And I think that although my life as a trademarks attorney brings me a lot of joy, I do see myself as a business person first. And I guess because I grew up in an entrepreneurial household, and people who live by their own businesses, whatever that was, you know, whether they were a freelancer here or they actually had an entire, you know, organized structure with, you know, employees. That was something that was steeped in me. And so, yeah, I think that's why I view my practice really as much as it's a practice, it's really a business. And I love that about it. I love running a business. And when I had my first firm back on the Gold Coast, you know, really, I really love growing people, and particularly helping people who are technically focused to find the joy and excitement in selling. Because if you can sell someone on what it is that you have a talent in, you know, I feel you've made it. I think that's the thing. And so I'm crazy about sales. That's important to me. Yeah.
I love the point there around the passion. But it's interesting, what I take from that is a lot of people say, hey, it'll be easy to sell once you're selling something you believe in and that's yours and that you're passionate about. But I kind of think there's also an element of skill that still needs to be developed, irrespective of how much you love what you're doing, still being able to articulate and sell it. Just discussing that concept for 1 second, if you had to outline maybe one key thing about the sales process, irrespective of what it is, let's say someone has got a product that they just absolutely love and is so passionate about it, it should just sell itself because I love what I'm doing. What's that one key thing you'd say you still got to lock into doing to make sure your sales process is really optimized?
You know, sales is two things. It's passion and numbers. You have to have the passion to get up and want to sell, because that's the motivating factor, right? There's something about that you're crazy about, and so you love it, and so it drives you there. But the numbers part of it is about being relentless. And for me, there is, and that relentless thing is a good thing. So some people see that as a pejorative, but to me, being relentless means having a system. And so that's where, in terms of sales, your system and working your system and not allowing your system to work you is so crucial. Find what it is that works, keep at it, and then find ways of improving it, keep at that, and be conscious of what changes matter, what makes the difference, because obviously you want to do more of that. But oh my goodness, never ever be egotistical about sales, because that'll do you in any given day. You've got to be open-hearted. You've got to be selling something that benefits someone else. And the focus is on what is it that they need from you and how will they benefit, of course. So passion, their benefit, and just keep at it. Mm-hmm. Have your thing and do it every single day. That's a relentless part of it. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Now, I have to ask, throughout your career, which you've done quite a lot and you've done it in different environments, which is really cool, what have been some, I guess, gender-specific challenges that you may have faced or you may have witnessed others facing that you've done something about or you've really enjoyed seeing something be done about? I just want to hear from you, your personal experience.
You know, I had a really fundamental, extremely shaping experience after I had my first child. I was 26. I had my daughter, and I was working part-time in Canberra as a journalist, actually, in the Department of Health. And the gender negative action that happened was that even though it was made clear that I was nursing my daughter, so I was breastfeeding my daughter on a regular basis, and so I really needed to have part-time hours, I was given the work that could only be done in a full-time role, which of course was intended to set me up to fail. And eventually, of course, I actually left that job and decided to go out on my own. And I'm extraordinarily grateful for that because it helped me to hone in on something that's become an extremely important value for me really ever since then. And that is to have control over my schedule as much as I possibly could. And so from an entrepreneurial perspective, one of the things that gives you, especially when you're a parent and, you know, woman or man, if you're a parent, if it matters to you to have flexibility in your schedule because of your children, you can do that if you're shaping your own business or if you can negotiate that with your boss. And of course, now more than ever, that is actually possible, which I'm grateful for. But at the time, the woman who was actually my supervisor was not flexible and she made it very difficult for me. And ironically, the next year she had a child and it became extremely easy for her to do what she needed to do. And so her learning maybe through me was that that's not the way to enable someone's career. And so certainly for myself, I'm grateful because it helped to really focus me in on being in control of my own life and my own schedule through basically running my own businesses, which I've mainly done except for a bit of a hiatus when I decided to go back to publishing for a little while. But I also had a really flexible, wonderful boss during that time who was extremely helpful to working women.
Right. So yeah. Now that you've become, the woman you are and the professional that you are in your career, are there particular things that either you'd like to see change that are just obvious that need to change that still haven't? Or are there things that maybe people aren't quite as aware of that are really crucial that you'd love to see change because you just know that it would improve the experience for the next generation coming through?
You know, I think one of the things about organizations when they become very big is that they do seem to lose a person-to-person element, I don't want to say humanity necessarily because that sounds maybe a bit dramatic, but an acknowledgement that, you know, really everybody is dealing with their thing. You know, I don't care who you are. You have got something going on in your life. Unless you are an individual living in a cave, if you're interacting at all with other people, you've got stuff going on. I remember reading somewhere that corporations that had acknowledged that smaller units were better all around in terms of productivity. I think that any time where you're in a corporate environment where you feel a bit lost, you feel like it's fake, you feel like you're not really being heard, I would encourage people in that circumstance to find an environment that's more more personable, more connected to living your reality. But having said that, I also feel too that people are responsible for where they are in life, and that it's useful for you to at least accept that bringing your own power to bear can change your world. And so while on the one hand, some people might find it uncomfortable to think that they're 100% responsible for where they are in life, the flip side to that is that if you do think that way, which I do think that's how I view it, it suddenly opens up this worldview that means that more things are possible. It's ironic, but the more you take on you as the responsible person for your life, I feel that the more opportunity there is for you because you're keen to sort of see what happens next. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what happens next. You know, I've been in business for 30 years and yet I am so excited to see what happens on the other side of lockdown as an example.
Yeah.
Great. This is going to be like the roaring 20s. We're just going to have so much fun.
I've got people defaulting on their buy now, pay later installment.
I hope, I hope not. I just think it's going to be great fun. Yeah, this is an interesting time we're living in. We're going to look back and go, wow, you know, it's more than my got the t-shirt, which is, you know, I survived COVID. It's a really powerful time. It's a really powerful time.
Talk to me, because that's an incredibly optimistic view and I love it. And you said that, hey, everyone's got something going on. Talk to me about, you know, what would be your biggest fears? Could be business, could be personal, could be to do with the broader world. But what are some things that, you know, you hold as your biggest fears?
I don't have fears. I'll just be honest with you. I just don't. I find that place self-defeating. It doesn't help me, and it doesn't help anybody around me for me to go there. I can't fix the world from a fear place, and I can't fix my world from a fear place. All I can do is intend for certain things to happen. You know, I can want to ensure that I have health. I want to ensure that I have love. Want to ensure that I have fun, that I have wealth, that I have great experiences. For me, the more I focus on the what I want, the more I make possible the what I want. And so going into the place of what I don't want, I don't want to spend any time there.
Yeah,
I don't want to welcome it in. I don't want to give it the path to my door. I say this to my kids, right? Right. So if you get caught up in the past, right, just think about a car, right? Like a car has a small rear view mirror for a reason. We don't need to look past as much as we need to look through and forward. But having said that, it's handy to be in love with where you've come from and accepting of it and appreciative, and to find people in your family that you think, wow, how did they do what they did? I'll just quickly show you the woman behind me.
Who's that?
And that's my great-grandmother, Ida. And she was just remarkable. And I just love that she's looking in on me. She survived the first pandemic of the 1918s. And she went on to have children and a huge life in public service. And she died as an old woman, and she just made an amazing life. And I love the energy and the inspiration she gives me. And she helps me to look forward. So, yeah, I hope that didn't sound like today's TED Talk, but it's just...
Well, it leads me to the next question, and you've probably given me one of your secrets to success, and you've mentioned those things earlier around productivity, right, and setting your day up.
Right.
Are there a couple of secrets you could share that have helped you maintain success when you've faced adversity? Things you've relied on to maybe turn something around quicker, or to be able to reset yourself when in the moment it must have appeared to be a really difficult time?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. I have I've recognized that having faith that things will work out, and here I don't mean religion, I mean having faith that things will work out. You know, it's going to be okay. I'm going to be on the other side of X, whatever, Y, whatever it is. And that I just have to close the gap between now and then. And in that time, which is our journey through life, I'm going to be living it. I'm going to be there. It's going to be as it needs to play out. So I think that having a knowledge that it's going to be okay. The other thing too that I really love is that things happen for me, not to me. Mm-hmm. And when you look at it that way, you recognize that the world is really it's really there for you if you want to look at it that way. But if you want to say things are happening to you, then you're going to be at the mercy of this, that, and the other. So I'm trying to find a place on a regular basis in my own mind where my happiness is not based on the current conditions of the time. It's not based on business sentiment. It's not based on clients coming through. It's not based on how much money is in the bank. It's really based on my own centeredness and my own connectedness to myself and my own faith that I'm living as much as I possibly can at that time. And that place is so much more interesting and, I don't know, just more multidimensional for me than otherwise. So when something goes bad and, you know, things happen, I like to look at it as not so much it's gone bad, but it's contrast. It's helped me to better understand what I'd rather have. You know, that crappy thing that happened, it's amazing how often in life we look back and it's that we call that crappy thing, we call that a turning point. How interesting that so often what we think at the time is the darkest points in our life actually end up being the turning point.
Yeah.
That has led to some of the most magical moments in our life. Mm. So I'm trying to be embracing of really not labeling, but experiencing, just experiencing some detachment to it. Yeah.
Let's see. Like this podcast, what an amazing experience.
Yeah, thank you. And for you, oh my God, to see an intention come to pass, to me, that tells me, Brandon, that you've got personal power. Oh yes, 100%. And I'm excited to see where that happens, what happens for you next and where you go with that. What's next in your leading of yourself? Because you're not leading anybody else at the end of the day. This is Brandon being Brandon, doing Brandon's thing and doing it bloody well. Good for you.
There's that hybrid Aussie-American accent when you say bloody. It's like, it's fantastic.
I got that nailed. Pardon my French.
We know he was the founder of Promo IP and Operation Trademark Rescue, but if you have to explain to me that hair on fire problem that you solve for people, and what it leads to, maybe, yeah, give me an insight into that.
Imagine if you wanted to call your baby your baby's name and there was something in between you and calling your baby that name, right? Well, I mean, right? You've got to have someone help you with that. And that's me, because, for so many people, their business is their baby, or their new project is their baby, or, you know, that new product or service that they're going to roll out, it's got this sort of really precious intention about it. And yet they need to call it something. And in this world that we live in, the process of nailing that down, you know, getting the statutory right to keep others from using that same name, is best done through a trademarks attorney if you can do it. And that's how I help. So a good portion of my business is actually helping other businesses that have chosen to not use me at the outset and they've self-filed, which is the term. And then they've run into issues because they don't realize that they're actually intersecting with legislation, with risk, with, you know, major bureaucratic practices. And so a lot of my work is actually helping businesses secure the trademark that they started, but which I finish for them. So and the other portion of it is filing trademarks, strategic filing for trademarks here in Australia and overseas. Sorry, Brandon, I interrupted.
No, that's great. So what would be the highest profile, most recognised sort of case study or example of this where, in your opinion, the outcome really could have been avoided for all?
Well, I think I deal with something like that pretty much every day.
I know people like Michael Jordan have become
right. At that sort of level. Yeah, look, that's a really good question. And actually, trademark stoushes at that level do happen pretty much, you know, every week somewhere in the world. When you sign up to the various international journals and trademark type material that I receive on a regular basis, you see those high profile fights happening everywhere. Here in Australia, in the US, of course, France, the EU, It amazes me, to be honest, that so many trademarks do attain registration, because everybody's trying to do this. You know, the Americans are receiving millions of trademark applications all of the time. We don't receive as many here in Australia, but every single week there are thousands flooding in from Australians and from overseas companies and individuals. So it's an extremely cluttered, congested market, which is why a guide like a trademarks attorney can be extremely helpful to that process. But in terms of what I do, what I find amazing is the really sophisticated businesses who do a lot right every single day. But for some reason, and I haven't quite worked this out, they sort of take a kind of laissez-faire approach to the trademarks and the their trademarks, which are like really powerful, very valuable brands, will be filed by someone who's never done that before. So that kind of blows my mind. And of course, I'm always thrilled when they become my client, because then we can get sophisticated about it. Mm-hmm. We can really make sure that the protection is there. For the protection that sort of matches the value of the brand, that's what I'm aiming for of a day. And so in my business, I deal with everybody. It's really remarkable. I don't know, maybe there are other businesses where you deal with a spectrum in a business, but I will deal with everybody from CEO, a director, a marketing manager, marketing coordinator, in-house counsel, CFO, literally anybody who's in a business will be a potential day-to-day contact for me, which is cool, because I get to be really in touch with a variety of people, all walks of life, actually, and I love that.
Yeah, it's awesome. Mm. We're running out of your precious time, but I haven't asked you one question that I know everyone's going to want to find out.
Okay.
Big heart on this one. What is like a secret talent that maybe, you know, only a few people in this world know that you possess or that you have and you can do?
Okay, well, I have a couple of, let's see, what's the word? I like collecting vintage movie posters. Just going to put that out there. So hi to the group. I collect vintage movie posters. And that started during, pandemic 2.0 or 1.0, so last year. Just ended up in that rabbit hole and came out with a whole bunch of really interesting movie posters that frankly just brought me joy. You know, I was crazy about them.
What's the most interesting, and what would be the one that's appreciated in value the most?
I don't know if any of them are appreciated in value, but I got really honed in on Star Wars, because I actually saw the first Star Wars in 1977 when I was a kid. And so I've been a Star Wars and space geek all of my life. That's another thing to confess. So I actually... I actually invested in Star Wars originals, three of them, for the three major movies from my time period. But they were actually, what was interesting about them was, of course, they were vintage, but they were actually the German releases of each of those posters. So it's not what I saw as a kid in 1977, but it's what my doppelganger in Germany would have seen as a kid when she went off with her mother to go see this crazy movie that had to be seen. A couple of Marilyn Monroe posters as well. And then I've been really, and she's not a thing for me. Like, I don't know where that came from, but these are also really remarkable, very beautifully designed by the graphic designer of the time. For whatever release that particular movie is that I've focused in on. And a couple of Czech and Polish language releases for famous movies. I don't know what it is, but I just love standing in front of them. And you're kind of looking at an image you recognize, but the language in front of you, you don't know what that says, right? I don't know why, but I'm crazy about that.
What's the most random thing you've either seen kind of trademarked or protected or seen or observed someone attempting to trademark?
Well, at my first firm, we had for the longest time the only Australian smell trademark. I think there's actually now only one other smell trademark. And so because a trademark cannot be descriptive, you can't trademark the smell of, say, a Chanel perfume. You have to trademark something that is extremely distinctive and unusual, really, because it's distinctive about that particular product. So the smell trademark we protected was the smell of eucalyptus on golf tees. So as you broke open the golf tee package, you'd get the smell of eucalyptus, right? And I don't know about you, I mean, I don't golf, but if I look at a golf tee, I don't immediately go, hey, koala food, right? I'm not thinking that when I look, right? So that's what makes it distinctive, and that's what gave it its power as a trademark. There are a handful of these trademarks that are smell marks around the world. For instance, the smell of Christmas pudding on washing up gloves. So that when you put your washing up gloves into the hot water after you've celebrated, you get the smell of Christmas pudding. Baby, I don't know where this stuff comes from, but that's the, so we had the only one for a while. So that's probably going to be the most random trademark I've ever dealt with.
Now, you've got experience in probably the market in the whole world, which is so serious about trademarking and protecting in America, and then you've got experience here in Australia, and knowing what we're trying to do as a business, you know, being a production company, I once heard, and I'd love you to confirm for me, can you actually trademark jokes or lines? Or I know you can do with scripts, but is it true that you can trademark jokes and punchlines?
If the joke or punchline was somehow indelibly related to your business, such that someone heard that joke or punchline and they thought immediately of your business as the sole origin of that joke or punchline, I guess there's that potential. But the funny thing about jokes and punchline is they're not enough for copyright typically. And they're kind of not comfortable in the trademark space. So sound trademarks are usually jingles, or they can be a famous sound that is really highly associated with like, for instance, a major brand. I'm trying to think of one right now, but I think it's maybe I think Intel has a sound trademark. So sound trademarks are particularly in that tiny space where it's like a sound. There can also be other sort of forms of trademarks that are unusual like that. But I'm just not convinced that you could really trademark a joke unless somehow it was like the slogan of your business. But then what is that saying about your business if the joke is the slogan?
Well, Alicia Paul Beverly, it's been a pleasure, and we're going to have to hold you to doing part two in person, either in our studio or when we get up to Sydney. For our audience watching and listening, how can we not just, you know, check you and your businesses out, but how can we collaborate? How can we participate? How can we get involved in your movement?
You know, that's wonderful, a wonderful way of putting it. I think, look, just reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm a bit sort of not social mediaed out, so I'm not on Facebook and I'm not on Twitter, but I'm definitely on LinkedIn, so please say hi to me there. My website is Komo, KOMOIP.com, so please check that out. Reach out to me in email. If you have something that I can help you with, probably one of my fondest ways of spending my day is sort of taking that in and listening to you and giving you what you need in terms of really, really taking that in and then telling you honestly what it is. And what it is doesn't have to be something that I get from it. It's just that it is something that is useful to you. So feel free to reach out. And my belief is that what goes around comes around. If I can give to you, I'm sure one day it'll come back to me somewhere else. So just reach out. Can't wait to hear from you.
What an awesome episode. We've got so many nuggets, and I can't wait to pick your brain further on all things, you know, IP and trademarking, because you're right, coming out of this time, I think there's going to be a bit of an explosion. So
100%.
We'll see how your space is, evolves and gets disrupted as well.
So exciting. Here we go. Thank you, Brandon. I can't thank you enough for the opportunity. I don't think I've had a platform like this before, so I really appreciate you just letting me go. I, you know, probably may not have said as much pre-pandemic, but I guess I have a lot to say whilst we're in lockdown. So thanks for that.
Thank you, Alicia.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of She Knows. If you loved what you heard, then do us a favor and review and subscribe to us on all your favorite platforms. To get in touch, head to gettorched.com and see you on the next episode.